If you are an adult and you do not have children in your home and you still get the pink eye, you are very disgusting.
I am the greatest.
I call the president. President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. That need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back Jack. And it is 4-1.
On that ball. Jackson has it. The All-American tight end is going in. And Oklahoma takes the lead on a 71-yard touchdown play.
I was going to rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lex is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody as ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm there.
Yo. And welcome back to the Fix Sports Podcast, which is the realest and the blackest sports podcast you have ever heard in your entire life, coming straight from the South, going down, Audio Shop Talk right here in your ear hole, brought to you by yours truly, Joseph Ward, via the Freedom Train Network at www.freedomtrainradio.com. Chew, motherfucking chew, getting it in sports. Given to you how it's supposed to be given to you, shop talk style, raw and uncut, the way we talk about it. When we talk about it on a regular basis, I'm just doing it on the podcast, talking to y'all. And I like that y'all talk back, too. Hit your homeboy, holler at your homeboy. I'm on Twitter. Well, I took Twitter off my phone right now. So I'm on Instagram at The Real Joseph Ward. You know, Joseph Ward on Facebook. You can comment up under the post. Your email at joe@freedomtrainradio.com. Holler at your homeboy. I talk back, too. You holler at me, I holler at you. And I want to say once again, I want to give a shout-out to my homie, Professor Carl Tone Jones, for becoming a patron on Patreon. So he's my first patron, so I want to give him a shout-out. And, you know, we got to show some love to Professor Carl Tone Jones because he pledging his money to us. He's got to get around his car, dude. At least give my homie a little round of applause. That's how we do. You know, you become a patron, I'm going to show some love, man. I'm going to show some love. So remember, the Fix Sports Podcast is on Patreon, www.patreon.com/thefix. And your contributions will be going toward the improvement of the Fix Sports Podcast, new equipment, being able to reach out to more people, travel, do more things, incorporate more information, expand this sports platform, and expand this whole podcast and media platform that we have at the Freedom Train Network. So that's where your contributions will go to. So if you see it in your heart to become a patron, definitely appreciate you, because you know this is FUBU for us, by us, and without you we ain't talking about nothing. Before we get into what we talking about, of course you know the Fix Sports Podcast is brought to you by On the Shoulders of Giants, and On the Shoulders of Giants brings you African history at your fingertips and on the go through the African History Book Series, African History Blog Series, the African History Curriculum app, which is available in the Google Play Store. So visit the Google Play Store, type in On the Shoulders of Giants, the On the Shoulders of Giants YouTube channel, the On the Shoulders of Giants African, the On the Shoulders of Giants nonprofit organization, excuse me, as well as lectures, keynote speaking engagements, educational sessions, anything that you need from On the Shoulders of Giants. All you got to do is visit www.ontheshoulders1.com or www.ontheshoulders.org, especially if you want to learn more about the On the Shoulders of Giants nonprofit organization. And don't forget that if you could learn more about the On the Shoulders of Giants book series, remember, they have two books out now. One is on the way, On the Shoulders of Giants Volume 1, North America, On the Shoulders of Giants Volume 2, Central America. They're out now. Visit www.ontheshoulders1.com to get it in the hardback. But if you want the Kindle version, go to Amazon.com, type in On the Shoulders of Giants or Joseph Ward, which is me, and you'll be able to get the books. And remember, On the Shoulders of Giants, Volume 3, South America, is coming very, very soon. The date was February 16th, but it got pushed back a bit, so make sure we measure twice, cut once, but we put it out so we ain't got to pull back and do nothing else that we need to be doing. But support your homeboy. And On the Shoulders of Giants is also on Patreon, so visit patreon.com/OTSOG. And yeah, that's how I get that. That's all. What we talking about today is January 10th. Hey, remember your homeboy birthday. My birthday is January 14th, which is this upcoming Monday. So show your homeboy some love on the 14th. It's my dog birthday. It's my dog birthday. It's my dog birthday. So January 14th is my born day. I'm going to be celebrating. You celebrate with your homeboy. Show me some love. I appreciate it. All right, so what we talking about today, season 3, episode 24. And this should be my 81st and my 82nd episode. So our HBCU spotlight, we got two spotlights that we're shining. So we're shining our first spotlight on the three HBCU players who ended up being 2018 NFL All-Pro selection. So we're going to tell you who they are, show them some love. Then we're going to show some love to former head coach. He was one-time former head coach of Florida A&M University, coaching legend Joe Taylor. His name, the College Football Hall of Fame inductee. So how about that? Now, last week I talked about, I introed it that I was going to talk about is LeBron the GOAT. But I forgot to talk about it. I really overlooked it. So I'm going to start. That's going to be the first topic after the HBCU spotlight. Have that discussion. Is LeBron the GOAT? After that, talk about Eastern Stick, North Dakota State, and the 2018 North Dakota State, who are the 2018 SCS champions. So I got to show my homeboy Eastern Stick some love. And it still sounds like a porno name, but he be winning, though. All right, a sports institute declares that flag football should be a standard until high school. I disagree, and I tell you why. We're going to talk about the death of Cal cornerback Bryce Taylor, who died at the age of 19, do a moment of silence for that. We're going to tell you about the 2019 NFL Pro Bowl rosters. They've been released, so we're going to talk about that. Alabama got their ass whooped by Clemson, so we're going to talk about that in the college football national championship game. The wild card round of the NFL playoffs are done. We're in the divisional round coming up this weekend, so we're going to talk about that. And how about the Cowboys? You heard me? All right, so will Jalen Hurts transfer from Alabama? I thought the time was up, but it said Jalen Hurts may transfer from Alabama, so we'll talk about that. Then we're going to look at the 2019 NBA All-Star voting numbers. Then the weekly rant came across this article not too long ago. It says 95% of NFL players say Colin Kaepernick should be on the roster, but yet 95% of NFL players who say he should be on the roster won't take a stand for Colin. Some let their ass happen. But let's start off with this HBCU spotlight, and we're shining it on these three gentlemen who come from HBCUs who are NFL All-Pros. So let's read. The NFL regular season has officially come to a close, so it's now time for some postseason play, postseason accolades, the HBCU edition. You heard me? It's no secret this has been a great year for talent coming from HBCUs across the league. What makes a great year become even better when three former HBCU players not only make it to the postseason, but are also selected for the 2018 Associated Press All-Pro Team. The NFL All-Pro Team is selected by a panel of 50 members of the media and is selected based off of regular season performance. Players can be selected to first team or second team, but all are considered All-Pro in nature. All right, so we got Darius Leonard. He comes from South Carolina State. He's a linebacker. He's first team. The Manic is having an amazing rookie season with the Indianapolis Colts. Yeah, he is. He definitely is. He and Quentin Nelson are two exceptional additions to the Indianapolis Colts. And, yes, Darius Leonard is a baller at linebacker. Yes, he is. Leonard's regular season concluded with 163 combined tackles, two interceptions, four forced fumbles, and seven sacks. Damn, he balled that. That's cause he might get that defensive rookie of the year with them numbers. 163 tackles, two picks, four forced fumbles, and seven sacks. That's a baller-ass rookie season. He and the Colts have advanced in the postseason, and they already played the Houston Texans. They beat the Texans, and they are playing. Who are the Colts playing? They are playing the Chiefs. Playing the Chiefs Saturday at 4:35. So, what time for that? Leonard. Next, it is Tariq Cohen from North Carolina A&T, a punt returner. He's with the Bears. Tariq Cohen, of course, he's from A&T, right? Cohen has gone above and beyond in the sophomore season with the Chicago Bears. His production significantly increased from his rookie year, closing out the regular season with 1,169 all-purpose yards and 8 total touchdowns. Damn. Cohen's season is not done either, as he and the Bears fell for the Eagles in the playoffs, but the Bears lost to the Eagles. So we'll talk about that. Okay, and then on the second team, Terron Armstead, he comes from Arkansas Pine Bluff. He's a left tackle. Armstead is the veteran of the bunch with 6 seasons under his belt with the New Orleans Saints. Unfortunately, he tore a pectoral muscle in week 10 and had to miss week 11 through 15. He played week 16, but re-aggravated his injury and rested for the rest of the regular season. He has a nice amount of time to rest as the Saints secure a first round bye and await to host the divisional game. And the Saints are playing the Eagles. So, one time for Terron Armstead, one time for Tariq Cohen, and one time for Darius Leonard. And as you know from the Fix Sport Podcast, to your homeboys, all truly, hey, man, round of applause. Give it up to them gentlemen. Give it up to me. Give it up to them gentlemen. Give it up to me. Give it up to the gentlemen, gentlemen. Give it up to them gentlemen. One more time, Darius Leonard, Tariq Cohen, and Terron Armstead. All right, so further into our HBCU spotlight, you heard me? Coach Joe Taylor is inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame. The National Football Foundation, the College Football Hall of Fame, announces its 2019 College Football Hall of Fame class on Monday, and it included former Hampton and Florida A&M head coaching great Joe Taylor. Joe Taylor! And the all-time winningest coach in Hampton history, Taylor, compiled an impressive 233 wins overall during his standout 30-year career that spanned 4 schools, 3 of which are in the MEA. His remarkable 70.6 winning percentage ranks in the top 10 in FCS coaching history. After one season as head coach at Howard, Taylor took over the program at Virginia Union, where he won 60 games in 8 seasons. His best season with the Panthers was in 1986, when he guided the team to the CIAA title, an 11-1 record, and a trip to the Division II playoffs. Taylor also guided Virginia Union to the playoffs during a 10-2 season in 1990 and an 8-3 season in 1991. Taylor shined during his tenure as Hampton's head coach from 1992 to 2007, posting a school record 136 wins while leading the Pirates to 4 FBN Black College Football National Championships. Hampton played at the NCAA Division II level his first 3 seasons, earning 2 Division II playoff appearances, including the school's first ever NCAA playoff win. Taylor guided the Pirates to CIAA titles in all 3 of these seasons and the first of his 4 Black College National Championships in 1994. After moving back to the FCS in 1995, his Hampton team would win 3 more Black College National Championships and 5 MEAC titles while making 5 FCS playoff appearances. The 4-time MEAC Coach of the Year owns 8 of the top 10 winning seasons in Pirate history, including the top 6. Taylor also guided Hampton to a win in the 1999 Heritage Bowl over Southern, and he coached 3 NFL scholar athletes during his time and at school, Timothy Benson, Malcolm Benson, and Michael Bland. Taylor continued his stellar coaching career at Florida A&M from 2008 to 2012, where he became the first coach in school history to win 25 games in his first 3 seasons. Arguably, his best season with the Rattlers came in 2010, when the team went 8-3 and claimed the Shepherd MEAC title. At the time of his retirement, Taylor's 233 career wins were tied for third amongst coaches in historically black colleges and universities. Over his entire career, he coached 68 first-team All-Americans, 142 first-team All-Conference players, and one first-team All-Academic American. A former president of the American Football Coaches Association, Taylor also served on the FCS All-American Selection Committee and in the Advisory Board Black Coaches Association. He has received Lifetime Achievements Awards from the AFCA, FCA, and the All-American Football Foundation, and he is enshrined in the Virginia Union Athletics, Western Illinois Athletics, CIAA, and MEAC Halls of Fame. Graduate of Western Illinois, Taylor played offensive line for the Leathernecks under college football Hall of Fame coach Daryl Mudra. He began his coaching career as an assistant at Howard D. Woodson High School in his hometown of Washington, D.C. from 72 to 77 before his first head coaching job. Taylor also served as an assistant coach at Eastern Illinois, where he helped the team to earn the 1978 Division II national title, Virginia Union, and Howard. So, one time for Coach Taylor, and you know how we got to do, show some love, put your hands together, put your hands together. Time for Coach Taylor. Coach. He ain't coach, he's Coach. One time for Coach Taylor. All right. So the question is LeBron James the greatest of all time? The greatest player of all time? My first answer is no. But let's put some context to this. LeBron was in his, you know, his shoulder shop, and they was talking about, you know, the 2016 NBA championship that they won over the Warriors that year. So, and I get the context of what he's saying. I don't have a problem with LeBron James saying that he is the GOAT. I don't have a problem with anybody thinking that they're the GOAT. But I really don't have a problem with LeBron James saying he's the GOAT if you look at what he's done over his career. Do I agree with him? No. But do I have a problem with it? Hell nah, either. But LeBron James was saying that he felt like he was the GOAT because he led a team. He did something nobody ever done in the finals. He led a team from a 3-1 deficit to an NBA championship over a team who had won the most games in regular season history. And a team who had just overcame a 3-1 deficit themselves in the Western Conference Finals over the Oklahoma City Thunder that year, who had Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook that year that Kevin Durant left the Thunder and went to Golden State. But a lot of people have an issue with LeBron James saying that he's the GOAT. I don't know why. You know, a lot of people be real butthurt and up in their feelings about a lot of stuff. But it's like, come on, be like that man. That man can, if that man feel like he the GOAT, because LeBron James is already on the NBA Mount Rushmore. The NBA all-time, if you had to do a Mount Rushmore, the NBA all-time five, starting five, Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan, LeBron James, Tim Duncan, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. For me. Or I can entertain Kareem Abdul-Jabbar with Bill Russell. Or I can entertain Bill Russell with Wilt. But it's either, for me though, it's either Kareem or Bill Russell. That'd be at that five. That's arguable for me. But LeBron James is at the three. LeBron James is the greatest small four of all time. Does that translate into the greatest player of all time? Not necessarily. When we talk about greatest player, I think we have to break that down. Are we talking about greatest all-time talent? Are we talking about greatest? Well, let me say that again. Are we talking about greatest as in talent? Are we talking about greatest as in wins? As we talking about greatest as in rings and things like that? Like, what are we talking about? Because if we're talking about greatest as in rings, then we want to go by rings. Bill Russell got 11. You know what I'm saying? Now, of course, people say Jordan is the GOAT because Jordan went 6-0 in the finals. Yeah, but Bill Russell went 11-1. Last I checked, 11 was way more than 6. And yes, Russell might got that one loss, but they won, like, they went past 6 in a row. Like, they won them consecutive championships. I think they won 10 in a row and then came back and won 11 or won 11 in a row and lost that 12. But looking at that, now Jordan is one of, if not the greatest player of all time. So, you know, you got the off time. I watched Jordan. I'm 34. I'm at 35 on Monday, but I watched Jordan. Just like I watched the 90s Cowboys. I saw it. I saw it with my own eyes. I never expected Michael Jordan. Two things with Michael Jordan. I didn't expect Jordan to miss shots, and I didn't expect Jordan to lose games. I don't have those same feelings. I don't think LeBron James is LeBron James didn't have a better career than Jordan. LeBron James is not a better assassin than Jordan. LeBron James didn't have a better career than Jordan as far as winning championships, I say that. LeBron James' overall career is fucking impressive, man. And LeBron James does a lot of things better than Jordan. And LeBron James has done some things career-wise better than Jordan. But Jordan went 6-0 in the finals, and Jordan was a fucking assassin on that court. And that, you cannot take that away from him, but that does not make Jordan the greatest of all time. For some people, that does. But for me, that doesn't make Jordan the de facto number one best player, greatest player of all time. But, shit, what do I know, right? It's just my opinion. Everybody going to have their opinion. I personally, and it's just me, and you've heard me say this before, I don't think that there is a one player that we can honestly say was way better than other people, because people find different things to argue about when we're talking about greatest players of all time. Because somebody say Wilt Chamberlain. Wilt Chamberlain was the most dominant. And that's another thing when we talk about greatness, throw in dominance. Because asking the question of who's the greatest player versus who's the most dominant, those are two different questions being asked. Because you can arguably say Wilt Chamberlain or Shaq were the two greatest, two most dominant players, or even LeBron, dominant. But why not Bill Russell? Well, I guess you could say the team was dominant in Bill Russell's case. But see, it's many different factors, excuse me, that go into asking or going that have to be answered or have to be, you know, analyzed when you're talking about who is the greatest. Number one, the de facto greatest player in NBA history. That's going to be argued because different people saw different things. I saw Jordan. I saw Kobe. I saw LeBron. I would take Kobe and Jordan before I take LeBron. Let me just say that. I think LeBron has had a more successful overall career. Jordan and Kobe have been more successful at LeBron at being assassins, scores, and winning championships. But LeBron has had a very, very, very successful career in ways that Jordan and Kobe haven't. But Jordan and Kobe have had successful careers in ways that LeBron hasn't either. So see those little idiosyncrasies that go into all that there? So that's a hard thing to be like, hey, man, you know what I'm talking about, dog? This dude here is the number one. This, you know, it's kind of hard. It's kind of hard. I really, just like with MCs, rapping and MCs, even though I lyrically, I think Rakim, Nas, well, see, but still gets to make money because Rakim, Nas, Black Thought, all these cats, who is the best? I don't know. But I don't have a problem with LeBron saying he's the GOAT, but I don't agree. So that's how I feel about that. All right, so let's move on. My dog, Easton Stick has led North Dakota State to yet another FCS National Championship. And it is the 7th overall championship. So North Dakota State is FCS National Champion for the 7th time in 8 seasons. I'm going to say that again. North Dakota State is FCS National Champion for 7 times. For the 7th time in 8 seasons, I'm going to say that again. North Dakota State is FCS National Champion for the 7th time in 8 seasons after defeating Eastern Washington 30th and 24th Sunday at Toyota Stadium in Frisco, Texas. And I did watch that game. Easton Stickman balled out. With the win, the Bison move out of a tie with Georgia Southern with six for most of all time. North Dakota State won five straight titles from 2011 to 2015, along with the past two championships. All right. Senior wide receiver Darius Shepherd was named most outstanding player of the game after tallying five catches for 125 yards and two touchdowns. He scored a game-long 78-yard catch and run in the third quarter to give North Dakota State a 31-17 lead. In his final college game, North Dakota State University's quarterback Easton Stick finished with five touchdowns, three rushing, two passing, and 319 combined yards. Stick's final dagger came on the 46-yard keeper into the end zone with a minute 16 remaining in regulation. In the third quarter, Stick surpassed Brock Jensen for most passing yards in school history. North Dakota State University took control from the onset, building a 17-3 lead deep into the second quarter. Eastern Washington came alive in the final 30 seconds of the first half, however, scoring its first touchdown on a fake field goal pass to make it 17-10 at the break. From there, the Bison outscored the Eagles 24-14 and continued to control the clock. North Dakota State had the ball for 40 minutes Saturday, twice as long as Eastern Washington held the ball. Eastern Stick balled out. He is the man. I just want to give a round of applause to not only Eastern Stick, but North Dakota State for dominating, man. I love 7-9. Easton. Go pull out the six, Easton. Go pull out the six, Easton. Pull out the six, pull out the six, pull out the six, that's that Florida music right there. That's that Florida music right there.
Block, stick, Easton.
Hi. So I wonder, I'm sure Easton is declaring for the draft. So I wonder, because I haven't heard any real people on these boards and talking about these QB classes and things talking about Easton Stick. My dog is a baller, and I think he may be, if not the one of the, I know he is, but if he's not the one of the most winningest quarterbacks in FCS history. So shout out to Easton Stick, North Dakota State, and everything that they got going on over there in North Dakota. You heard me. All right, so a sports institute declares that flag football should be the standard until high school. I disagree. But let's read and get more information because I might change my mind. Flag football should be the national standard for, and this is written by Dennis Dodd, some bald head white man. So let me stop. Flag football should be the national standard for competition until high school age, according to the study released Wednesday by the Aspen Institute Sports and Science, Sports and Society Program. In a white paper, the Institute concludes that a combination of less contact and the teaching of proper tackling techniques will improve the quality and safety of football. This debate has been pushed to the forefront because it's clear how much more it is at stake now. The Institute states, starting with brains of children, which need to function effectively and efficiently to thrive in the new information-based economy. Specifically, the Institute recommends USA Football, Pop Warner, and other youth and all other youth football organizations shift to a standard of flag football before age 14. Those same organizations begin teaching fundamental blocking, tackling, and hitting techniques at age 12. But you can still do that and tackle, though. Like, I don't have to not play tackle, but also that's my choice if I want to play tackle. That's my choice if I want, like me and my sons, we sit down and we want to play tackle. And you can't take that choice away from me if I want to play tackle. You know, but it's, I mean, I get it, the safety precaution, because you do have institutions and places out there who are not teaching proper tackling and all those things there. But that's my decision to choose. If I want to play tackle football, I can play tackle football before the age of 14. That shouldn't be something that's legislated in. But it's, you can still teach proper technique, proper things on how to tackle and new age things in this realm of tackle football, right? High school and college minimize, this small thing that's saying, high school and college minimize non-gang tackling and player collisions by adopting Dartmouth-style instruction and practice standards. Not a lot of, well, you don't have to hit every day, but I do believe you need to hit. You do need to do some hitting, but you don't need to hit every day. You have to get used to the hitting. And getting used to hitting in-game is not good, right? The football industry, including high schools and colleges, is fanning the flag football offense. Flag football should be an option, but I don't think it should take away my choice. The recommendations follow the trend in several states that have at least inducted legislation to limit the amount of full contact for youth. California, Illinois, New York, and Maryland have proposed age restrictions. None of the bills have passed. We think a lot of that is based on very one-sided, very narrow research without any control group. John Butler, executive producer of Part One of Youth, told CBS Sports, there's no evidence that starting tackle football at any given age causes particular problems. Football coaches at every level have already discussed the issue, according to Todd Berry, executive director of the American Football Coaches Association. When is the appropriate time to begin playing tackle football, Berry said rhetorically. The majority believe that tackle football begins too early and that flag football is the correct means to begin the game. Now, 7, 8-year-olds, not like they're playing tackle, maybe not, but 10, 11, 12, maybe 12, 11, 12, something like that. But, you know, if you teach it right, it'll go right. If you teach right, it'll go right. Where our coaches have not been able to come to a consensus is what is the appropriate age to begin tackle football. We have withheld because of the minimal number of large studies in the medical community not coming to a consensus. The Institute began digging down on the subjects with a series of discussions beginning in January. It cites research that shows the number of players in high school football shrank from the fourth consecutive year in 2017 to 1.07 million. Participation among children ages 6 to 12 has fallen fewer than 17% over the last 5 years. The UMass Lowell Center for Public Opinion Research in 2016 found 78% of adults do not think it is appropriate for children to participate in tackle football before the age of 14. I mean, that's cool, but the football factory ain't suffering no time soon. And I'm not advocating you start your child early. I'm just saying, don't take my choice away from me to play tackle football. If I'm a child, if I'm 12 and I want to play tackle football, that's my choice. Let me make that choice, especially me and my family and my coaches. We sit down and we do everything right. But, you know, I do understand the studies and things like that. I do understand what they're getting at. And safety can be had, but I can learn to be safe and play tackle football. There are 1,000 fewer students playing football in the state of California since 2015, the Los Angeles Times reported. The Dartmouth-style technique has been widely discussed in 2016. Ivy League coaches decided to eliminate full contact hitting during the regular season. I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that. Sometimes you got to hit to get ready. You got to hit to get ready. You got to, I mean, one you got to hit at least one practice out the week. You got to have contact. It ain't got to be full on crazy contact, but you got to have some contact. At least one practice out the week because you got to stay in the habit of getting hit and hitting. And if you've never played football, you may not understand. But it's a certain condition that your body has to be in, and I don't think. Like, you don't have to do the stuff we did was crazy. So, story time. So, well, not story time, but a little bit of story time. So, when every day in high school, when it was time for us to, especially first day of pads. So, the first week, we didn't have pads. It was just helmets. Then, first week of pads, especially that first day, if we practiced for 3 hours, we hit for 3 hours. The bull ring. The bull ring is when you have a number of players, they form a circle. You put one person in the middle of the circle. Everybody has an anonymous number. Everybody has a number. They know their number, but the person in the middle don't know everybody's number. When your number is called, you run head, full speed, and try to knock the shit out of the person in the middle of the ring. And the object of the person in the middle of the ring is to resist your hit, is to collide with you and not let you put them on their ass. And so you never know when people come in. It could be two, it could be three, all those things. So you got the bull ring. You got Oklahoma. Oklahoma is when you got two opposing players, they lay on their back like 10 yards apart. They're laying on their back. One person is the offensive player. One person is the defensive player. Coaches say, down, sit, up. And players will get up as fast as they can. And the tackler is trying to tackle. And the offensive player is trying to score. So he's trying to elude him. He's trying to tackle. Then you got the machine gun. Machine gun is when you line up all the players. It's one person at the beginning of the It's one person 10 yards away from everybody else. Have a full line of players. And everybody takes their turn hitting the player that's 10 yards away. You run 10 yards full speed, bam, 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 like a machine gun, like just going, just going. Then they say, double up. And when they say double up, that means two people coming at a time. So you got to find the best angle, get between two people, and bam, resist them, like hit them with both shoulders, bam, it's shoulder to shoulder contact. You hit, bam, 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 bam. So this type of contact for us could last 3 days. Straight, just straight hitting 3 days. And I get it, but that was unnecessary. You have to hit to get into hitting in football shape, but you don't have to be ridiculous with the hitting. And we didn't really learn how to really hit properly and do things that. Remember I told you, to play free safety at my high school, during my time in back, you had to break at least one jaw. Dennis Thomas Gillum was the last of the jawbreakers. Now, I don't agree with the stuff that we did, but I don't think you should take away my decision to play football and the family's decision to put their child in the football. And it is on the family and the coaches and the whole programs to make sure that proper hitting is being taught so we don't have injuries, head injuries, and other type of injuries like that. I get what they're saying. I don't totally disagree with everything that they're saying, but I don't think middle school tackle football is a bad thing. So that's just me. All right, so sad news and some sad news. Cal's cornerback Bryce Turner dies at the age of 19. And Cal is the University of California, the school Marshawn Lynch and Deshaun Jackson and Aaron Rodgers went to. So Cal redshirt sophomore cornerback Bryce Turner died Saturday at the age of 19. School announced his passing on Twitter. Today we lost a beloved member of our Cal family, the tweet read. Rest in peace, Bryce Turner. You'll be forever in our hearts. He was born in 99. He was on 20 years old. Turner was hospitalized on December 30th with what his family described as a medical emergency. There was no official cause of death announced. We're also deeply saddened by Bryce's passing, coach. Cal coach Justin Wilcott said in a statement via ESPN, this is an extremely difficult day for everyone. Our heartfelt sympathies go out to Bryce's family, friends, teammates, and so many others who have been a part of his life. No words can accurately describe the pain we feel in our hearts right now. We'll always remember Bryce and how he impacted all of us, Cal football. So Turner is Turner transferred from Long Beach City College and played in one game for the Golden Bears this season. So as you know how we do, I want to give a moment of silence to Bryce Turner and his family. And my condolences to Turner, his family, friends, coaches, and everybody, all his loved ones. All right, so Pro Bowl. It's Pro Bowl time, playoff time, Pro Bowl time here. So let's give you the Pro Bowl selection. But let's read this first before we get to the Pro Bowl selection. All right, Patrick Mahomes' MVP caliber season is getting the Pro Bowl treatment. The Kansas City Chiefs' second-year wonder kind is among the starters for the 2019 Pro Bowl in Orlando, Florida. Mahomes leads a contingent of six Pro Bowl selections for the Chiefs, whose representatives in the January Classic include wide receiver Tyreek Hill and tight end Travis Kelce. Fresh off punching their tickets to the postseason with a comeback over the Chiefs, the resurgent Los Angeles Chargers have a lead leading seven Pro Bowl selections, including Phillip Rivers, Melvin Gordon, and Keenan Allen. The Chiefs and Pittsburgh Steelers each have six Pro Bowl selections, and the Chicago Bears, Dallas Cowboys, New Orleans Saints each have an NFC leading five Pro Bowls. How about them Cowboys? The 2019 Pro Bowl takes place at Camping World Stadium in Orlando on January 27th at 3 p.m. So the AFC Pro Bowl roster by position. Of course, you know, some of these things are going to change with the injury and people going to the Super Bowl. But as of right now, the wide receivers are DeAndre Hopkins of the Houston Texans, Tyreek Hill of the Kansas City Chiefs. I think they might be the start. You got Antonio Brown of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Keenan Allen of the Los Angeles Chargers, and Juju Smith-Schuster of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Tackles, Tyler Taylor-Lewan of the Tennessee Titans, Alejandro Villanueva of the Pittsburgh Steelers, and Eric Fisher of the Kansas City Chiefs. Guard, we got David Castro of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Marshall Yanda of the Baltimore Ravens, Quentin Nelson, my rookie of the year, of the Indianapolis Colts, Joel Benito of the Cleveland Browns. He's a sub for the Castro. I told y'all about Quentin Nelson and Baker Mayfield for the draft. So the center is Marquise Pouncey of the Pittsburgh Steelers and Mike Pouncey of the Los Angeles Chargers. So them boys get to hang out crazy twins. Tight end is Travis Kelce of the Chiefs and Eric Ebron of the Colts. All Eric Ebron got so many skills. Detroit wasted that man's skill set. Quarterbacks are Patrick Mahomes, Phillip Rivers, and Tom Brady. So the running back is James Conner of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Melvin Gordon of the Chargers, and Phillip Lindsay of the Denver Broncos. Fullback is Anthony Sherman of the Kansas City Chiefs. Defensive end are J.J. Watt, the Houston Texans, Myles Garrett, the Cleveland Browns, and Melvin Ingram of the Los Angeles Chargers. The interior linemen are Geno Atkins of the Cincinnati Bengals, Jarrell Casey of the Tennessee Titans, Cameron Haywood of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Kyle Williams of the Buffalo Bills. Outside linebackers is Von Miller of the Broncos, Jadeveon Clowney of the Houston Texans, Dee Ford of the Kansas City Chiefs. Inside linebacker C.J. Mosley of the Baltimore Ravens, Fowler, Bernardrick McKinney of the Houston Texans. Cornerback is Xavier Howard of the Miami Dolphins, Jalen Ramsey of the Jaguars, Stephen Gilmore of New England Patriots, and my brother, cousin, rookie, baller, Denzel Ward. Free safety is Derwin James, baller. Defensive rookie of the year, probably, I don't know. Nah, not really the dude from the Colts. And from Eric Weddle from the Ravens. Strong safety is Jamal Adams of the Jets. Special teams is the kicker, Jason Myers of the Jets. Long snapper to be named by the Colts. The punter is Brett Kern of the Titans. Return specialist Andre Roberts and special teamer is Adrian Phillips. Andre Roberts of the Jets and special teamer is Adrian Phillips of the Los Angeles Chargers. So the NFC offense will start wide receivers. You have Julio Jones of the Falcons, Michael Thomas of the Saints, Adam Thielen of the Vikings, Devontae Adams of the Packers, and Mike Evans of the Buccaneers. Our tackle is Tyron Smith of the Cowboys, Terrion Armstead of the Saints. You know HBCU, Trent Williams of the Washington Redskins, guard Zach Martin of the Cowboys, Brandon Brooks of the Philadelphia Eagles, and Trey Turner of the Carolina Panthers. Center is Alex Mack of the Falcons and Max Unger of the Saints. Tight end is Zach Ertz of the Philadelphia Eagles and George Kittle of the San Francisco 49ers. Quarterback is Drew Brees, Jared Goff, and Aaron Rodgers. Quarterback is Todd Gurley, Saquon Barkley, and Ezekiel Elliott. Fullback is Kyle Juszczyk of the San Francisco 49ers. Defensive end is Cameron Jordan of the Saints, DeMarcus Lawrence of the Cowboys, and Daniel Hunter of the Minnesota Vikings. Interior lineman is Aaron Donald of the Rams, Fletcher Cox of the Eagles, and Nakeem Hicks of the Chicago Bears. Outside linebackers, Khalil Mack, Ryan Kerrigan of the Redskins, Anthony Barr of the Vikings, and Oliver Vernon of the Giants. And they said Oliver Vernon is a sub for Khalil Mack. Inside linebackers, Luke Kuechly of the Panthers and Bobby Wagner of the Seahawks. Cornerback is Kyle Fuller of the Bears, Patrick Peterson of the Cardinals, Darius Slay of the Lions, and Byron Jones of the Cowboys. The free safety is Eddie Jackson of the Bears and Harrison Smith of the Vikings. Strong safety is Landon Collins of the Jets. Special teams, Aldrick Rosas of the Giants, long snapper to be named by the coach. The punter is Michael Dixon. The Seahawks return specialist is Tariq Cohen of the Bears. And special teamer is Corey Littleton. So that's 2019 Pro Bowl roster. Of course, you know things are subject to change. All right, so Monday, the College Football National Championship happened. And going into the game, remember I told y'all that it could go either way. I thought Clemson could beat Alabama. I thought Bama could beat Clemson. But I thought Bama had an advantage at the quarterback position. Not a huge advantage, but an advantage at the quarterback experience. And experience, but we do know when you put pressure on Tua, Tua do melt down. But I did not expect Clemson to come drop 44 points on Alabama. Clemson had 31 points at the half on Alabama. Going to the half, the score was 16-31. Clemson balled out. The first series in the game, Tua threw a pick six to the cornerback at Clemson. Clemson's defense came to play. Clemson busted Alabama in the mouth. At times, you saw that, yeah, Alabama got talent, but Clemson busted him in the mouth. Clemson's front four and their front seven came to play. That helped Clemson's back seven because at times it looked shaky because Alabama got talent out there. The running backs and the receivers was doing a couple of things, but Clemson's defense made key stop after key stop after key stop after key stop. Trevor Lawrence was throwing that peel. Trevor Lawrence showed up and showed out. He went 20 for 30, 347 yards, three touchdowns, and no pick. Travis Etienne, the running back, baller, NFL player, 14 carries, 86 yards, two touchdowns. As far as receiving, Justin Ross, the freshman, had six catches, 153 yards, one touchdown. T. Higgins had three catches, 81 yards, and a touchdown. And, you know, I thought Hunter Renfrow would have did more than what he did. He had two catches for 10 yards. But then Etienne had a receiving touchdown. But, hey, man, Tua threw two picks. A.J. Terrell had a pick. He had a pick six. And then Trayvon Mullen had a pick. So Clemson balled out, though. Clemson played a great football game, all phases of the game. Alabama, their kicker was messing up. They couldn't block. Like Clemson's defensive line was dominating Alabama's offensive line. Quinnen Williams still did his thing, but it's just Clemson overall, they're not scared of Alabama. They bust Alabama in the mouth often and early and didn't relent and didn't let up, didn't give Alabama a chance to get back into the game. Even though you can see the skill on Alabama's side, still see the skill on Clemson's side. Clemson and Alabama are clearly the two best programs in college football, head and shoulders above everybody else. Tua went 22 for 34, 295 yards, two touchdowns, and two picks. Najee Harris had 9 carries, 59 yards. Damian Harris had 11 carries, 57 yards. Josh Jacobs had 11 carries, 47 yards. Josh Jacobs is going to be live on Sunday. Jerry Jeudy balled out, though. He had 5 catches, 139 yards, and a touchdown. So, but, yeah, it was a very, very, very interesting game. I didn't expect Clemson to come out and beat the shit out of Alabama. I knew Clemson could win this game. I didn't expect 44-16. That blew them out. One time for Clemson. Hey, you know what I forgot? Let me give a round of applause to North Dakota State and a round of applause to Clemson for winning their respective national titles. Trevor Lawrence balled out. Trevor Lawrence stepped up to the plate, man. One time for Trevor Lawrence, too. Shout out to Trevor Lawrence. I wasn't sure, but he showed up and showed out. All right. So we'll talk a little NFL playoffs. So the wild card round happened. So the Colts, the Indianapolis Colts, beat the Houston Texans. The Colts look good. So the Colts, they're going to have to play the Chiefs this upcoming weekend. Andrew Luck went 19 for 32, 22 yards, two touchdowns and a pick. Marlon Mack, the running back, had 24 carries, 148 yards and a touchdown. And T.Y. Hilton had five catches, 85 yards. Dontrell Inman had 4 catches, 53 yards and a touchdown. And Eric Ebron had 3 catches, 26 yards and a touchdown. And the losing effort, Deshaun Watson, went 29 for 49, 235 yards, one touchdown and one pick. As far as rushing, Deshaun Watson was the leading rusher with 80 carries, 76 yards. Kiki Kuti had 11 yards, 11 receptions, 110 yards, and one touchdown. DeAndre Hopkins had 5 catches, 37 yards. Lamar Miller had 8 catches, 63 yards. So that's what happened in that game, Colts versus the Texans. The Chargers beat the Ravens. Very, very, very entertaining game, very interesting game. The Chargers got up early on the Ravens. The Ravens, their strength is running the ball. Lamar Jackson had a tough time holding on to the ball. The Ravens' defense is amazing, but so is the Chargers' defense. The Chargers' defense showed up and showed out. The Ravens' defense showed up and showed out. Just the Ravens can't win a championship being one-dimensional. And Phillip Rivers came to play. Keenan Allen came to play. That Chargers defense came to play. Derwin James came to play. Joey Bosa came to play. Everybody came to play. Chargers got the 23-17 victory over the Ravens. Even though the Ravens tried to mount a comeback, they scored 14 points in the fourth quarter after only scoring 3 points the whole game. It was a low-scoring affair. Defenses are just live out there. So Phillip went 22 for 30, 260 yards. No touchdown, no pick. Melvin Gordon went 17 catches, 40 yards, with a touchdown. Mike Williams had 2 catches, 42 yards. Keenan Allen had 4 catches, 37 yards. So for the Ravens, Lamar Jackson went 14 for 29, 194 yards, 2 touchdowns, 1 pick. Lamar Jackson also had 9 catches, 54 yards. Kenneth Dixon had 3 catches, 53 yards. Willie Snead had 3 catches, 58 yards. Michael Crabtree had 2 catches, 38 yards, and 2 touchdowns. So the Eagles beat the Bears 15-16. I didn't have a chance to watch this game. Apparently, I don't have NBC on my Hulu on Roku, so I got to find out how to get NBC free. But the Bears lost to the Eagles. The Eagles, Nick Foles, magic. You know, Nick Foles went 25 for 40, 266 yards, 2 touchdowns, 2 picks. Darren Sproles had 13 carries, 21 yards. Alshon Jeffrey had 6 catches, 82 yards. Zach Ertz had 5 catches, 52 yards. Golden Tate had 5 catches, 46 yards. And Dallas Goedert had 2 catches, 20 yards, and 1 touchdown. And the real game, how about them Cowboys? Dallas Cowboys defeat the Seattle Seahawks 24-22 to make it to the divisional rounds. And we're going to play them Rams coming Saturday, and we're going to put that bang on them Rams because our defense is actually better. So Russell Wilson went 18 for 27, 233 yards, 1 touchdown. Rashad Penny, the running back, 4 carries, 29 yards. Tyler Lockett, the receiver, 4 catches, 120 yards. J.D. McKissick, the only one to score, 2 catches, 13 yards, 1 touchdown. So for the Cowboys, Dak Prescott went 22 for 33, 226 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 pick. Zeke went 26 carries, 137 yards, and touchdown. Dak had 6 carries, 29 yards, and a touchdown. Amari Cooper, 7 catches, 106 yards, no touchdown. But Michael Gallup had 2 catches, and one of them was a touchdown. How about them Cowboys? So the divisional round coming up Saturday at 4:35. We got the Colts versus the Chiefs. And then Saturday at 8:15, we got the Cowboys versus the Rams. Sunday at 1, we got the Chargers and the Patriots. And Sunday at 4, we got the Saints and the Eagles. That's how it's going down. All right, so question is, will Jalen Hurts transfer from Alabama? So let's read this thing. I just looked at this the other day. So I was like, well, Jalen Hurts, I don't know. Because I thought Jalen would be going on to the league by now. And I thought Jalen should transfer last year, but okay. So Finally, the biggest offseason storyline everybody has been waiting for is happening. Alabama quarterback Jalen Hurts has reportedly entered his name into the NCAA transfer portal. The junior has one year of eligibility remaining after graduating from Alabama in December. He'll be eligible to play wherever he wants immediately. Hurts, unsurprisingly, didn't want to talk about his future plans Monday after Clemson blew out Alabama 44-16 in the national championship game. In that moment, he was focusing on being with his teammates. We just came short on the national championship, he said in the locker room, and it hurts. Just because Hurts has taken this step in the transfer process doesn't mean he will leave Tuscaloosa. He has applied to a sports management graduate program in Alabama, but now other schools can contact him. Free agency is on. Now, Hurts went 26-2 as a starter for the Crimson Tide before losing his job to Tua. Rather than transform before the 2018 season, Hurts was loyal and stuck with his team. I thought that was more so Saban being selfish, but hey. It was a good thing, too, because Alabama needed him to come off the bench for the injured Tua Tagovailoa in the SEC title game that led the Tide to a comeback win over Georgia. Hurts, who played in the fourth quarter against Clemson, threw for 4,861 yards, 40 touchdowns and 10 interceptions, and ran for 1,809 yards and 21 touchdowns in his 2 years started. He's now expected to draw interest from almost every program in the country. Without an entrenched starting quarterback, leaving Alabama won't be easy, but here are some places that might be a natural fit. So, let's see. So, Oklahoma seems like an obvious choice. Could be. Oklahoma is used to grooming transfer quarterbacks into Heisman Trophy winners, college football playoff contenders, after all. All Lincoln Riley needs to do, if Hurts is skeptical, is have him get on the phone with Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray. Hurts may not be as explosive in the down-the-field passing game like Tua Tagovailoa, as a quick release like Murray, but he is a running threat who doesn't make mistakes. Riley is a proven offensive guru who's guaranteed, who's garnered NFL interest. Soonest, so we ain't got to read about all that. So that's Oklahoma. They said TCU. Miami, that's what I was thinking, the Miami Hurricane. I was thinking Jalen Hurts could go to Miami, and that might be nice with Miami Diaz, with Manny Diaz. So say Maryland could be. Maryland is a long shot. Louisville is a long shot. I would go to Miami if I was him. So that's the thing about Jalen Hurts. So we're going to keep our eye on that, see if Jalen Hurts actually goes to one of these schools. Oklahoma is an interesting choice. I didn't think about that. I was just thinking about Miami. All right, NBA All-Stars around the corner. It's January. So NBA All-Stars around the corner. So the first return and the second return results are in for the NBA All-Stars. Oh, this is the first return, excuse me. So let's start with the West. So LeBron James leads all people with votes and votes with 1,083,363. So I ain't gonna read all the numbers, but for the front court, LeBron has more votes. So you got LeBron. I'm going order of votes. So you got LeBron James, Luka Doncic, Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis, Paul George, Stephen Adams, Nikola Jokovic, Kyle Kuzma, Draymond Green, DeMarcus Cousins. As far as guards, you got Stephen Curry, Derrick Rose, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Klay Thompson, Damian Lillard, DeMar DeRozan, Lonzo Ball, Devin Booker, and Chris Paul. It's amazing that Derrick Rose had the second highest number. So for the East, you got, for the front court, you got Giannis Antetokounmpo, Kawhi Leonard, Joel Embiid, Jimmy Butler, Jason Tatum, Blake Griffin, Vince Carter, surprisingly, Andre Drummond, Gordon Hayward, and Al Horford. As far as guards, you got Kyrie Irving, Dwayne Wade, surprisingly, Kemba Walker, Ben Simmons, Victor Oladipo, Kyle Lowry, Zach LaVine, Jeremy Lin, Bradley Beal, and John Wall. So that's the first return. But I did see something about the second return, because they were saying how Kevin Durant was surpassed by somebody doing a second return. So let me kind of look at that real quick. Bear with me as I look, and I can see the new thing. I don't know. Oh, well, that's the first returns. I don't know. So next time I talk to you, I'll do my best to find the second returns. I don't want to be on here all the dead air time looking for that. But I found the voting page, but so you can go vote. So go vote for your favorite NBA players. Now the time has come for thine Friday rant. So I almost forgot the day was goddamn Friday, Thursday, Friday, whatever day it is. I almost forgot the day was this day podcast day, but whatever day it is, it's my podcast day. I almost goddamn forgot. When I got home, I'm like, oh shoot, podcast day. So here I am podcasting. So let's get down on the Friday rant. So 95% of NFL players say they believe Colin Kaepernick should be on the NFL roster, but now these same 95 motherfuckers won't take no stand for Kaepernick. So what the fuck the point is to saying this shit? Because y'all ain't doing exposing yourselves as born bitch-made people. So now, you mean all 95 of y'all believe that, but if 95 of y'all decide to take a stand, Kaepernick plays. or shit like this won't ever be able to happen again, even if Kaepernick don't play. So let's read. Former NFL quarterback Colin Kaepernick still has support inside NFL locker rooms despite not playing since 2016, according to The Athletic. Correction, he has verbal support, not real support. In an anonymous poll released on Thursday, 81 of 85 offensive players who were polled said they believe Kaepernick should be on the NFL roster. Two players voted no, and two players issued no comment on the subject. Kaepernick received a vote of confidence from the survey voters. 20% of voters said they would replace Jacksonville's Blake Bortles with Kaepernick. 18% said former ex-49ers should replace Nathan Peterman. Somebody saying, shit, anything that carries three quarterbacks for sure, third guy on the roster. And the majority of the teams with two quarterbacks, he should be a backup. One anonymous player told The Athletic, in some places, he should be the starter. Kaepernick last played in 2016, yada, 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 yada. Yeah, but you all are saying this, but you all are making no moves to make sure things like this don't happen to Kaepernick or things like this don't happen to another player. And see, that's my problem with this whole thing about these players and this whole vote of confidence or these players who have Kaepernick back and all these things. They full of it, man. They're full of it. Y'all have had ample opportunities to show real support for Kaepernick, and you botched that. You didn't show up. You didn't show up. Stop with this bullshit. Y'all don't really care like that. Y'all don't really care, because if you really cared, you would have took a real stand. Y'all ain't taking this. There's like four players, maybe three, two, maybe one, who's still taking a stand by themselves, and it's not really helping. I mean, things are not really coming out the way you all expected with the whole protest and all these things here. Then you got Malcolm Jenkins and them taking hush money and all these things here that's happening. And I don't like it because it's not real. You all are fake. You all are just being verbal about your activism, and that's not activism. That's advocacy. Activism is taking. You have to be active to be an activist. You might advocate for Kaepernick playing in the NFL, but it doesn't go past that. It doesn't go past the verbiage with you all. It doesn't go past talking. That's all you guys got. Well, I believe Kaepernick should be in the league. Well, hell, a lot of us believe Kaepernick should be in the league, but you guys actually have a lot of the power that goes into helping Kaepernick be in the league. Now, on the flip side of that, I have to think about the people who said that we're going to protest and then protest. Now, I ain't going to lie. I watched the NFL this year. And the only reason I watched the NFL this year so I could be able to talk about it on this podcast. But I really didn't watch football like that. Actually, football served more as a backdrop for me this year than anything else. Like, I watched, but I ain't watched. I watched the Cowboys, but I ain't really watched. So I'm not totally, you know, going to try to jump on people who didn't start watching the NFL. But if you're a person who was like, man, I don't like the NFL, all this other shit, blah, 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 and then you still didn't make an attempt to stop watching football at all costs or nothing on no level, then you ain't really talk about that. But it's still, all in all, on both sides, it's still all fake activism. Let's just be real. Even myself included, I'm not excluded from that in the respects of, especially if I'm still going to watch the NFL, whether it's for purposes of the podcast or not, I'm still watching the NFL. So I still have to look at myself and be real about myself. Like, hell, I am not above reproach. So I got to get on my own ass too. But this whole thing about these players and these rhetoric and all these things about Kaepernick and what everybody wants and what could happen and all these things here. If we, as people who don't like what's going on with Kaepernick, took a collective real stand, Kaepernick could either A, be in the NFL, or B, things like this would never, ever, ever happen again. And that's not where we at, because we all are just talk. We're all just talk. And until we stop with this damn talking, the verbiage, start taking real actions, nothing will ever change. That's why we don't get the change we desire, because we just be fucking talking. The 95% of the, who are all those 81, whoever those players are, and then the player that's talking about, shit, you should be on this, y'all are for, you ain't even man enough to put your name on it. Anonymous surveys, y'all didn't want to put y'all name on it. Shout out to Eric Reed. At least At least Malcolm Jenkins got his name on it, even though he's taking hush money. At least he got his name and his face on it. Some of the people like Eric Reed and people like Kenny Stills and other people like that who ain't scared to put their name and their voice on it like that. Shout out to them. Taking, well, really taking the stance and putting their career on the line. You know what I'm saying? But we don't get a lot of that going on because a lot of people just be talking because it's, and in today's climate, and in a lot of climates in the past, you can become a hero just by talking, not by doing anything, but just by talking. People become leaders. People build followings and all these things by doing nothing but talking, taking no real action. That's why things don't change, because motherfuckers don't take no goddamn action. Motherfuckers just be out here just talking shit. Just fucking talking, flapping your goddamn gums with your stank-ass breath. Fuck out of here with all that shit, man. Grown-ass men. Look how docile these grown-ass men are. Not just the football players, but the fans as well. We are to blame as well. We all failed fucking Kaepernick and everything that was going on. Yes, it was unorganized from the jump, but we all failed this shit. Me included. Yep, I fucking failed too. Why? Because I'm watching the NFL. And yeah, I can say, well, I'm watching the NFL for the purposes of my podcast, but nevertheless, goddammit, I'm still watching the motherfucking NFL. And me watching the NFL for the purpose of my podcast still puts money in the NFL pocket. So I'm no motherfucking different. So my ass is included in this motherfucking rant, too. And I'm doing this to let you all know that with these rants, nobody is above reproach in these rants, not even my skinny ass with these thick-ass kneecaps that I got in these skinny-ass legs. Goddammit, the bald spot on top of my head. My ass ain't no different. So we have to stop with the bullshit, the fake ass, just talking. Hell, the Migos told you to walk it like you're talking. Y'all just talking like you're talking. Ain't no walking. Y'all got to start listening to the Migos, man. The Migos told you, walk it like you're talking. Nah, we just over here just motherfucking talking. Ain't talking about nothing either. Ain't making no headway, ain't making nothing change, ain't nothing getting better. You don't like the Kaepernick situation, but you ain't gonna do nothing more but talk about it. Fuck out of here to me and everybody else who own that bullshit. Fuck out of here, fake ass, activist ass motherfuckers. Kiss my ass. And that's all I got to say about that. I'm Joseph Ward. This is the Fix Sports Podcast. We're right here on the Freedom Train Network at www.freedomtrainradio.com, where we get it in and keep it in and hold it down. And I told y'all, this is the realest sports podcast you have ever heard in your life. And yes, Joseph Ward, I'm going to get on your ass too, because just because you hosting this goddamn show don't mean your ass is free. Two fingers in the air like a motherfucking player.
Call the president. President, we need a National Guard. We need as many men as you can spare because we are killing the Patriots. So call the dogs off. Send the National Guard, please. They need emergency help.
That ball hit hard. Stretch. Austin Jackson back looks up. You can put it on the board. Yes. Back to back, Jack.
Gonna rip his heart out. I'm the best ever. I'm the most brutal and vicious and most ruthless champion there's ever been. There's no one can stop me. Lynx is a conqueror. No, I'm Alexander. He's no Alexander. I'm the best ever. There's never been anybody ruthless. I'm Sonny Liston. I'm Jack Dempsey. There's no one like me. I'm from Air Force. There's no one that can match.